Hey everybody, just a quick programming note. We are going to start off talking a little bit of Wednesday baseball with Chris Durrell, and then at near the end of the podcast, we will transition into talk on PGA and the Barclays Championship coming up this weekend. So it's a double pod today, baseball and PGA. Let's get it on. All right, you're back in the DFSR, and we're here with our daily Major League Baseball podcast for Wednesday, August 24th. I am Doug Norrie. I'm here with Chris Durrell. We're going to talk a double slate of baseball. Chris, how's it going, man?
It's going great. Glad to be back talking baseball.
Yeah, I'm excited, too. This is a pretty full day. We also have, like I mentioned at the top in the opening, we're going to get, at the end of the podcast, we'll talk a little Barclays. Chris breaks down PGA. If this is your first time with us, we're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short. Want to help you build Major League Baseball lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. We're really kicking. I mean, we're really pretty much in the throes of the season now, the dog days of August. And if you haven't seen, we just did a full update and launch of our NFL product, which, I mean, obviously we're getting close to NFL season. But if you head over to the site now, you can grab a free two-week trial of that. That actually includes baseball also. So all of our subscriptions fall under one umbrella. So if you grab the two-week trial, you're also going to get baseball projections from now until, I mean, basically the end of the season. That's free for 2 weeks right now, and then $29.95 after a month after that. You just go to DailyFantasySportsRankings.com. /PlayerLab, and you are all set. Our NFL product is robust. I would say it's on par with just about anyone else in the industry at this point in terms of filtering, game selection, trending, and really just all the filters you need to set NFL lineups. Very, very, very excited about what our good friends over at Lineup Lab have put together for us there. All right, I think I've done my little salesy spiel to the best
of my
ability. How'd I do? Well, you know, don't even tell me now. Grade me off the air. all right, Chris. You wrote the picks last night. Sometimes I'm wary about double slates of baseball because you need a lot of things to line up correctly. I think for safety. By the way, whenever I mention the word safety from now on, I'm putting quotes around it for when it comes to baseball because I just don't think
air quote.
Yeah, air quote. I don't think and the correct use of air quote. Like my kid's been using air quotes lately, just completely wrong. She has no idea. She understands the concept that you can put air quotes around things, but she doesn't understand like the way to do it. So I understand the way to do it. It's about safety. It's not the way that we relatively speak about it. Let's talk about this, the first slate of games. We're going to skip the 12:35 game because that's really only on the all-day FanDuel slate, and it's not even on DraftKings, so forget that one, Houston at Pittsburgh. Let's look at the four games starting at 2 o'clock through 3:40. Give me your thoughts about this slate in general. Maybe if there's a pitcher that stands out to you, what are you thinking here?
Yeah, I don't normally like playing the early slates, but once again here, we got a nice early slate. We got some pitching that's going to be viable. My favorite option, I guess, out of those four, I'm going to be riding Kyle Hendricks. When I started writing the picks last night, I believe they were like -240 favorites, and within about a half an hour, I was down into the catcher zone, and they were already moved up into the -250 favorites. So definitely going after Kyle Hendricks today. In that matchup with San Diego, they rank last against right-handers, and they just aren't don't have a very good lineup. Nothing really scary, and Hendricks has been pitching very well, so he's definitely the pitcher I'm going to be targeting. I got looking a little closer at the Seattle-New York game this morning. I really like that 7 over/under. I haven't really decided what pitcher I want out of that game yet. I really like the Mariner bats to begin with last night. Some of the left-handed bats against Tanaka. But being a little bit of a park downgrade is where that 7 over/under, I think both teams are projected around 3.5 runs today. So maybe not so much for the bats, but you could grab a value pitcher in Iwakuma at home, or if you trust Tanaka. I don't, however, trust Tanaka, so I'm going to be laying off him a little bit. Pretty much the only pitching option for me is going to be Kyle Hendricks. And then I like the hitters both sides of the Colorado Brewer game this morning. Tyler Anderson and Zach Davies aren't really that great of pitchers. 8.5 over under, it would be the highest of the total of the morning so far. So I'd probably favor the Colorado side a little bit first, and then the Brewer side. How about yourself? What are you looking at for pitching? Anything
yeah, I'll
outside
circle
of Kyle
back.
Hendricks?
Nah, Hendricks is it for me. The Cubs pitchers have basically buzzed through the Padres over the last 2 days between Lester and Arrieta. It's lined up with some Vegas expectations. The lines have been huge for them. I mean, I think either Lester or maybe even both, were in that minus 250, 260 range when it was all said and done. And like you said, the Padres, they stink. I know they've added Dickerson and Schimpf, and they have Jankowski at the top of the lineup. So there are some lefty bats that give you a little concern, whereas I feel like I've said this the same exact thing over the last couple of days, but those lefty bats at the top are just a little bit different than the Kemps and Melvin Uptons of the world. And so, yeah, no, but I'm just not worried about the Padres at all. Jankowski is funny, too, because the last couple nights he's gotten on and then just run himself out of, run the Padres out of by just getting picked off a couple times. So, I mean, that's a little bit bad luck on his part. Overall, I think you see Hendricks as the chalk play for sure, at least in cash games. The big concern for him always in the early part of the season was his pitch counts, right? Like, so he was going something in the 80 pitch count range early on in the season as they, I'm not sure if they were just keeping an eye on him or what the deal was, but that really is a thing of the past. He's going, you know, 95 to 100 pitches pretty much on lock over his last five or six starts. So no, I'm totally with you on Hendricks. And who was the other? Oh, you mentioned the Mariners and the Yankees. Yeah, the run line, it was funny, the run line on that dropped really late last night. It started in like the eight range or eight and a half range, and then as the game got closer, it dropped a full run to 7.5 between Sabathia and Walker. So it's always a little weird to try to evaluate teams like the Yankees getting out of Yankee Stadium and into a, like you mentioned, a pitcher, more of a pitcher's park. That's a super low, a 7 over under right now. I think you can probably go either way of that matchup for a tournament because both pitchers have upside. Yeah, so I think the reason I like slates like this early, I mean, well, I primarily just play cash games, so this is where my brain usually rolls, is when I can see a clear starting pitcher one, in this case it's Hendricks for me, on a slate, then I kind of can just have almost anything else happen in terms of bats to feel pretty good about it going in.
Yeah, I'm on board with that for sure. And, you know, Hendricks being safe right around that 7.8K per nine rate, but he has shown us a few times this year he has the upside of that double digit. I think he's got 12 strikeouts twice this year. So, I mean, that's always there. And this would be a team that he could get those double digit strikeouts against for sure.
Yeah, because the Padres just, they just really are not, especially at the bottom of the lineup, are barely even fielding a major league team. So, yeah, Bethancourt, he cannot hit righties even in the slightest. And then they're going
to who's Patrick Kivlahan?
Kivlahan came up, and I mean, if you suspect that he's going to, I don't know, hit a home run one of every six at bats or something that he has, then great, he's great. But I just don't see a lot to get excited about for him. So the Padres just aren't a very good team. The money line's great here, over under great. Everything really contextually lines up. You said you liked the Colorado Milwaukee game. I actually like them. I like the total in that game. I also just like the Cubs again here. The Cubs are just are still a good team. They get their prices dip a little bit because they're moving into Petco, but they're facing Paul Clemens. And I mean, don't let the Clemens name fool you. He's not related to to Roger, and he doesn't really have anything that would suggest that there's nothing in his makeup that would suggest he was related to Roger Clemens anyway. Just by the way he pitches. But the Cubs have one of the higher totals in the day. Clemens walks the ballpark. He's walking close to 5/9, xFIP of 5.72. He stinks. So I'm just kind of looking. It's going to be those three teams: the Rockies, the Brewers, and the Cubs for me. Probably just filling out lineups based around those three teams. All right, so like I said, the decisions for the early slate, to me at least now, short of getting some lineups in, look pretty clear, and I get a warm and fuzzy feeling when that's the case going into a shorter slate. Let's move ourselves over to the evening slate of games. Some interesting things going here. I kind of feel almost the same way about the evening slate as I do about the early, though there are a few more games. Let's see if our thought process lines up here. When I'm looking at pitching on the evening slate, we have Fernandez and Darvish. Are these the guys that you're sort of looking at, and does one stick out a little bit more than the other to you?
Yeah, those are going to be the two main guys for me tonight. Fernandez sticks out a little bit more. They're pretty close in price. I think Fernandez is $600 more on DraftKings, and then he is, $300 more. So they're very close. Fernandez just a touch more. I lean Fernandez. I like his matchup at home. He's pretty dominant at home. Kansas City hasn't been that great this year. I think they're ranking in like the bottom third of the league in WOBA versus righties. And Fernandez, he's coming off his shortest outing of the year. He went 4 innings against Cincinnati at Great American Small Park. He gave up 5 earned runs there, but I'm not really concerned about that with him. He's an elite pitcher. He's got like near a 13K per nine rate, so he's got that strikeout upside. I think he's the safest safest guy with the most upside on the slate. And then Darvish is pretty close behind. He's been really good too, with about a 12 K per nine since coming back in May, the end of May there. And he hasn't given up more than three earned runs in any of his starts, keeping his ERA below three as well as the xFIP too. So I think they're both very viable, but I'm leaning Fernandez more for a little bit of safety, just because he's been so dominant on home.
Yeah,
at home.
It's funny. I love when a chalky pitcher was bad the previous game. So Fernandez in that start against Cincinnati, I'm pretty sure was the highest owned pitcher on the slate. I'm nearly positive he was. At least on FanDuel, might have been. He might have been actually on DraftKings too. So I love when a majority of the field had a guy that got. I mean, I had him too. Although I think on FanDuel I had Bumgarner that night, but I had him on DraftKings. But when a majority of the field gets blown up by a pitcher, that I'm just positive sticks in fans' minds. It doesn't stick in my mind. I don't personally care about that really, but I know for a fact that people just do evaluate that "what have you done for me lately" piece on baseball players, and they have this thing in their head where they say, "So and so screwed me last time. I'm not rostering me never again on Jose Fernandez. He screwed me." I'm like, yeah. In some ways, I get dismayed when I hear that, because I say, oh, we have a long way to go in terms of player evaluation when it comes to DFS. But I am also encouraged, because the more people that think that, just the more bad decision making that gets made. He's the clear play for me over Darvish today. The run, just about everything helps him in this case. The park is much, you know, you had Darvish going in Cincinnati, like you said, small park. That's the, you know, one of the best power parks in baseball. No thanks. Fernandez has the money line in his favor, has the park in his favor, has the opponent in his favor. He just really has everything in his favor here. Yep. And everyone that can talk themselves into Darvish over Fernandez at that same price point is money in the bank for me, I think.
Yeah, 100% agree with you there. Darvish, I think, you know, last night I was really thinking that Darvish was going to be the pivot off of Fernandez, but I think that's going to be the other way around now, because of that recency bias and people going to Darvish because of Fernandez's last start. So if that's the case, I'd like Fernandez even more.
And don't confuse here. Darvish is elite. It's not that. They're elite talents. And so I'm not – it has nothing really to do with the talent thing. It's really – for me, it's all the contextual pieces around it. Like I said, park, run line, all that opponent, all that stuff. If you throw two equal, let's call Fernandez and Darvish equal. I don't think they are. I think Fernandez is better. But let's just, even if they were just equal pitchers, all the other factors around said pitchers would have me leaning Fernandez as well. After those two guys, maybe I don't know if I'm going to be able to roster them together on DraftKings, because their combined prices are close to half of your overall salary cap at 24.6. After those two guys, where can we look maybe for a starting pitcher too, or if I just wanted to go a little cheaper at pitcher on FanDuel, is there another pitcher that stands out to you here?
One that's kind of I'm looking at a little bit on DraftKings as a second pitcher option is Jared Eichhoff. He's got about an 8K per nine rate. He's kind of been awful a little bit lately, allowing three or more in runs in three straight games, but he has shown a little bit more of the K upside lately. I like the matchup against the White Sox. It's going to be more of a GPP play for me today. The White Sox are down near the bottom against right-handers with a 21% K rate, so that's just kind of something I'm targeting. Plus, I like the offense behind him, being able to get him the win today, which is a little more important on FanDuel, that win being, I think it's 15 points now, so... But other than that, really not a whole bunch. Do you have any guys you're targeting down low that you're willing to take a risk on in FanDuel as a second pitcher?
I don't know. I mean, Rich Hill comes in. He's coming up high in the system. I'm not sure I totally trust that at this point coming back. He's coming back off the DL right now. So I don't know if he's a guy that I'm really going to get too excited about. But I need to look into see why the system is high on him. A couple other guys that I think people might talk themselves into. I can see people talking themselves into Porcello today against Tampa Bay. The Rays K a ton against righties. They don't have much in the way of power bats when it comes to the left-handed side of the plate. Porcello's thing is that he's been so consistent, right? He's going like 7 and 8, 9 innings, or 7 and 8 innings, just pretty much on lock. And the peripherals are fine, but I get a little worried that his overall fantasy value is boosted because the guy just wins every single time out. He has a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. He has like 9 wins in his last 10 games, and that...
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's just really not sustainable, right? I mean, even if he's a favorite, which he basically is because he's a good pitcher and the Red Sox are good, just that kind of win rate is just not something that you can pencil in for a pitcher really at any time. So while I like the peripherals, I like the matchup, and I love the ballpark for him, I get worried that his price is maybe, you know, 10% higher than it should be just because the guy just wins every single time out. So that would be my little bit of my concern with him.
Do you think he makes a really good GPP pivot off of Darvish and Fernandez, being that he's, you know, right in that same price range as those two, and people are going to overlook him?
So the second part makes sense. The people will overlook him because they'll just easily play Darvish at the same price play. So that would be the reason. But that would really be the only reason, though, because
not the upside.
Yeah, the upside just is not there. He's just not a double digit K guy or he just doesn't strike me as one. So whereas Fernandez and Darvish have that double digit K upside. From that point of view, I'm just not really that excited for him at the same price. It's not the price is a little different on he is, you know, 10% or 5 to 10% less on FanDuel, so I think you can get a little bit of savings there. On DraftKings, it's tough. What do you think about his name came up briefly off air, but we never actually discussed him. Is Zach Greinke at 9,600 on DraftKings against Atlanta? Is Greinke a guy you can trust at this point against an Atlanta team, or is it a stay away for you?
Yeah, I actually considered him in cash games. I was actually just looking at his player card and stuff right now. He's had some bad starts this year, but I just think in the pitcher's park, against Atlanta, who's just not very good against right-handed pitching, I think Greinke makes a very viable option. He struck out 8 Padres in his last time out. He went 7 innings, gave up 2 earned runs to them. It's kind of scary to give up 7 hits to the Padres, but again, he struck out 8, so there's that upside there too. And I think under 10K, on DraftKings, he is where he's most viable. He seems a little overpriced on FanDuel for me. What are your thoughts on Greinke?
It's funny because I don't know. It's always hard to evaluate teams, right? So I think the conventional wisdom is that Atlanta stinks, right? But over the short term, they've had some recent success over the last, I don't know, couple days, mostly because they've been playing in Arizona against really bad pitchers like Godley and Archie Bradley. So they've been hitting well. So I think some people might say, I can see the line of thinking that says something like, well, Atlanta's hot right now. I don't want to roster Greinke against them. Well, yeah, they're hot, but they're hot because they face bad pitchers in a great park, right? So which is it? It's like chicken or the egg. I'm not sold that Atlanta is like this new offensive team where they are scary to deal with. They face bad pitchers. Now, Greinke is forced to still pitch in a good pitcher's park, so he's a little behind the eight ball there. But he's significantly better than those other guys on the Diamondbacks. His peripherals are fine. You know, 8 Ks per 9, less than 2 walks, 3.67 xFIP. This guy's still a good pitcher, and so I can see sort of that same recency piece that we talked about maybe with Fernandez. It goes the other way with hitters, where I know people are like, Freddie Freeman, this guy's the best. Yeah, he's good. Markakis has no power. Inciarte has no power. Kemp's a strikeout machine against righties. So, I don't know. I kind of like Greinke. That would be probably my pivot. Not maybe Porcello. It would probably be Greinke. A little bit cheaper with a lot of other factors lining up where people could probably talk themselves out of them.
Yeah, I can definitely buy into that for sure. I think Greinke makes a great option. So, let's
roll into the hitters on this later slate of games. Let's not go position by position because I don't think we need to roll it that way, especially if we want to talk some PGA at the end of this. Is there a stack or two that stand out to you if you're running, if you're running lineups now? Is there a stack or two that you can get behind that looks like that have some upside or there's some cheaper plays? What's a team that maybe stands out to you on this later slate?
There's a little bit of rain concern later in the game. I like it kind of has this, I guess I'll start off with a sneaky one. It's not my favorite one, but the Phillies and White Sox game, kind of both sides of that game. I like Eichhoff as a pitcher a little bit, so I'm a little scared of the White Sox, but the Phillies, I think, bring some upside today against James Shields. He has been just absolutely horrible. I see the projection system absolutely loves picking on him too. So
yep.
You get Franco in there. Ryan Howard's been hot lately. I think he's hitting like 350 this month. over 350. So Tommy Joseph, he started last night, so I'm pretty sure it's going to be Howard in there tonight. Looking a little further, I really always like targeting the Twins when they're facing a lefty. Matt Boyd's been pretty good lately, but I'm not buying into it, I guess you could say. And looking at Sano, Plouffe, and Dozier as those right-handed guys that crush left-handed pitching, and I believe that those two games are the two highest run totals of the day. And we got the Twins right around 4.7. And actually, both of those games, both teams are projected around just below 5, like that 4.8, 4.7. So I guess Vegas thinks both sides are going to be, you know, viable options. There's going to be some runs scored in that game. The Twins one's going to be a little bit safer just because of that rain factor. Anyone else that you're targeting?
Yeah, I really like the Phillies call because I had the Phillies at about 4, a little less than 4.6 implied runs right now. It's actually dropped a little bit, but okay. I have them. That is about as high as you're going to see them on in terms of implied runs. So it's one thing. Okay, you can say to yourself, well, 4.5 implied runs is less than, you know, 6 or 7 other teams, maybe 5 or 6 other teams in the slate. That's true. Except the Phillies are priced like a team that have like a 3.5 implied run on a nightly basis, or maybe a little bit more. So when you get a team that's maybe 20% higher than their baseline average, then I'm totally with you. You're getting a lot of these guys on the super cheap, and Shield stinks, and just he's a fly ball machine pitching in just the wrong ballpark for him. So I'm all over the Twins there. I love all over the Phillies there. I'm all over the Twins as well. You hit on all the guys that I was going to kind of bring up with those righty bats in the middle of the order. That makes a lot of sense. I still think the Rangers are in play here. They're another team that have a pretty high implied run total going, and you know, for the same reason we maybe mentioned that we didn't want to roster Darvish here, getting these Rangers in Great American Ballpark against Adelman is a great spot, right? Like they messed around a little bit with their lineup last night. They hit Desmond leadoff. I'm not sure they go that way again. I hope they do. So if they hit like Desmond leadoff with Beltran second, just that little bit of a tick up in plate appearance expectation for those guys where they're priced, they're priced like they're going to hit a spot or two lower. I'm all over it. Desmond's still 3,800 on FanDuel, totally reasonable. Beltran was coming real cheap on DraftKings yesterday. I don't know if he's still, let me just check if he's still in that range. He was like in the 3,200 range on DraftKings yesterday. Yeah, 3,500 for Beltran, hitting second against Adelman in Great American Ballpark. That's lock and load time for me. You could see the mess around, maybe putting Profar back up at the top of the lineup. The Rangers
he's super cheap.
Yeah, all the Rangers are cheap right now, especially on DraftKings. Profar 3,100, Beltran 3,500. Those prices are just kind of silly, all things considered, for those
it's
guys.
It's like they're facing like a really good pitcher or something.
But yeah, but it's not. It's Tim Adelman, right? So they have, I think right now I actually do have them as the highest implied run total on the day, just a tick under 5 runs. So all three of those teams are the ones that are standing out to me. In terms of just, and I'll probably just end up building most of our cash lineups around those guys. Is there a one-off guy here and there, maybe that aren't on those teams that you can get behind, that you can get behind playing, or are you going to kind of focus most of your buy-ins around the Twins, Phillies, Rangers, and I think those are the three?
No, I definitely like some Nationals too. Just looking at that game, they're looks like they're projected for around 4.7, 4.8 runs against Wade Miley, and they're a top 10 team against left-handed pitching. I think Bryce Harper even has some pretty good splits against left-handed pitching for his career too, so he could be a sneaky play. Always got to bring up Bryce Harper, so I thought I'd mention his name.
Contractually obligated.
It's been a while for me.
we make the joke that no one has been talked about more on this podcast or in our. We have a chat room on our site. If you haven't been to the site, a live chat where people are just talking baseball all day, football. You know, I'm assuming Sunday is going to just be all over the place in that chat room there. But Bryce Harper's a guy that I've probably written half of a book about Bryce Harper this year. Harper and Trout both on FanDuel are only 4,000. Those prices are just too low for both those guys. I mean, I know Trout's facing Estrada, who's he's fine, whatever. But if the roof is closed in Toronto tonight, Trout has, he's at least platoon neutral. He actually might be better against righties for his career. But those two guys, I have them really projected for just about the same amount of points at at 4,000 salary. That's it's kind of easy, really, to play either one of those guys. Those guys are just total elite talents that are mispriced on FanDuel. So for cash games, if you're trying to one-off, I'm with you. Harper, Trout, both those guys, 4,000, way too cheap. Is there any other just cheaper options you see here, or are we pretty much covered it?
I think it pretty much covered all those options. I think you can find your cheap options, like you said, with with Texas, especially if Profar's back in the leadoff spot, just right around that 3,000. He's 2,800, I think, on FanDuel. I just think that's almost a must play. He hasn't been the hottest, but I just think the opportunity in Great American Small Park against Adelman, if he's at the top of the lineup, I'll even take him fifth or sixth, you know, at that price, just to be able to fit in some of those big pitchers.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I think we're on pretty much on the same page there. This baseball slate is lining up for me to be pretty clear cut, really. I mean, I like when I can stare at a day where I say, I have, you know, these pitcher or these two pitchers, especially on FanDuel, where I need to roster one, where I can feel pretty good about their money lines and their win expectations going in, and really all the other context pieces line up for me, and that's Hendricks and Fernandez early and late. And then those teams that have implied run lines also significantly higher than the next closest teams with cheaper bats, that's the time where I think I say to myself, you know what, I usually put an X amount of bankroll on a given slate. I can maybe do, you know, X times 10% and feel okay about it, because when our projection system has things laid out pretty clearly at this early, that means, that to me implies a lot of, again, quote unquote, safety. So I think that's where I'm looking on this baseball slate today. All right, let's transition over to golf. Chris also covers PGA golf for us on a weekly basis for DraftKings and Fantasy Feud. This week, it's the Barclays going down. It's the beginning of the PGA playoffs, which, as from a point of honesty, I had no idea the PGA even had playoffs until Chris mentioned that off the air about 35 seconds ago. So it's the beginning of the PGA playoffs, and you know, if it isn't already abundantly clear, I'm pretty much a total noob when it comes to PGA, which is why we rely so much on Chris here. So I like to take this. I like to come at the PGA things as just saying, if I was new to PGA, how do I sort of begin? What are some of the things I want to look at on the current or on a tournament slate? And you know, just where can I start to be building cash lines and GBP lines for PGA? So, Chris, walk me a little bit through how the Barclays lines up for you, and where you're looking this week in terms of value.
Yeah, for sure. So this week we got the Barclays. It's tournament one of four in the PGA playoffs, where the winner's going to take home $10 million at the Tour Championship here in about 5 weeks. This week the Barclays, it's got to feel more like a major championship, as you know, the winning score here, it's a rotating course every year. So this year it's at Bethpage State Park. The Black Course, which is one of the hardest courses on tour. The last time it was used at the Barclays was 2012, and it was also used two times prior in U.S. Opens, 2002 when Tiger Woods won, and 2009 Lucas Glover took it home. So just looking at Lucas Glover on there, you can tell right away that you know, putting isn't going to be 100% important this week, because he is awful at putting. Yeah, going a little bit further, the top 125 players in the FedEx Cup points are the ones that continue on. This week there's only going to be 121, as Anirban, Lahiri, Danny Willett, Sergio Garcia, and Shane Lowry are sitting out. That's not really going to affect them. They're high enough in the points where they're not going to fall out of the playoffs by missing the first event, and we see this every year. I don't think Sergio Garcia plays the first event. I think it's been like 4 years in a row now. Looking at the Black Course here, Bethpage, it's famous for the warning sign going into the course that reads, "The Black Course is an extremely difficult course, which we recommend only for highly skilled golfers." Huh. So I'm never going to go there unless I'm going to watch a tournament. it's got very small fairways. It's got very heavy rough, tons of sand in very inconvenient spots. Combine that with some small greens and you have a very difficult course. We're probably looking at like a -5 winning score, -5 to -10. Whenever that happens, birdie or better percentage is usually something I look at in the tournaments where it's -10 to -20. This week, I'm looking at it a little bit because it correlates with DraftKings scoring, but I'm looking a little bit more at bogey avoidance, as you're really going to want to avoid those big numbers, because par is going to be a really good score on a lot of these holes, especially the par fours, which some of them are quite long. So looking at par four scoring and bogey avoidance together is going to be huge for me this week. Par five scoring is where guys are going to want to get most of their scores at. Just kind of looking back at the 2009 U.S. Open, par four scoring for the guys in the top 10 was +51, whereas the par five scoring was -40. So that's like a 91 stroke difference. So you're going to want to make your strokes up on the par fives for sure.
Right. So when you're taking a look at all that stuff, I mean, like, you know, are there certain golfers that are just that stand out to you even more in that case? Like, I know you mentioned a couple other guys, but those are your main targets this week?
Yeah, it's like I said, it's kind of like a major championship because you've got all the top guys in the field this week. So looking at the guys from 9K and up, I mean, they're all really good golfers. So trying to pick a couple that you're going to maybe fade becomes a little difficult. The guys that I'm really looking at are Jason Day, Dustin Johnson. They both are having fantastic years. They both come with the distance. They both do very well on par fours, fives, birdie or better, bogey percentage, all those things that I'm looking at. I'm leaning a little bit Dustin Johnson. He comes with $500 savings, and he, back in 2012, the last time it was played here, he finished third, and he also played the U.S. Open back in 2009. He finished 40th, but I believe that was it was early on in his career, and that was his first trip to this course, which I think a 40th is actually pretty good. So those are kind of my two high-end guys. Yeah, a guy that I'm looking at maybe is a little more sneaky in that top end is going to be Jordan Spieth. He's kind of the forgotten guy. You know, a lot of people pegging that he's not having the greatest season. Now, that's not having the greatest season. He's got two wins this year, so he's made almost $5 million just in golf alone. So
I'd love to have a bad season like that.
Yeah, that would be just awful to have a season like that. That would be just awful. But he's been overlooked just because, you know, you got Henrik Stenson. He won the Open. Dustin Johnson won the U.S. Open. Rose right below him. He just won the gold medal in the Olympics. So I think there's a lot of options around him that people are just going to flock to. Spieth's kind of burned some people in the past. And I think this is a course he really gets up for these challenges of these tough courses. He hasn't had any experience here at this course, but like I said, he's an elite player, and he gets up for these kind of events and these kind of courses, takes the challenge on. So I think he could be really sneaky for GPPs and definitely has the upside to win this week.
You know, and I was remiss to mention, I should have mentioned this at the beginning, and I didn't, so bad by me. But Chris has all these picks up in an article on our site that breaks down some of his top golfers. And then he also, within that article, there's a chance to purchase a cheat sheet that breaks down more of the statistics around PGA that he's looking at on a week-to-week basis. You know, he mentioned some of these here, like birdie and better, but he has it all basically broken down within that cheat sheet with some specific targets in tiers that are going to help you build lineups specifically for cash and GPP. So if you head over to the site and take a look at his article, and then for $4.99, you grab really basically you get all the rest of his thoughts and brain pickings on the Barclays this week, and that'll really break it all down for you there. Chris, give me some final thoughts here on Barclays before we get out of here.
For sure, I got a nice value play at the bottom. Just with it being, you know, all the top 125 players are all going to be good, so we get a ton of value down in the 6 and the 5K range. Like a guy like William McGirt, he finished 10th here in 2012. He's had a pretty good year. He missed a cut recently, but, you know, he fits a lot of those stats, and he's only 6,100. So I think it's a week where you're going to want to pick four or five of your favorite top guys and then mix them in with some of these lower-end guys. Building lineups this week is actually pretty easy with, you know, with the amount of value we can find that we don't normally find in the 5 and 6K range.
And these are the great sweats for PGA, obviously, too, because like Chris said, most of the field is just playing and all the name players are playing. So if you want a way to sweat it out the weekend, especially on a Sunday before we get into NFL, PGA is just the way to do it, especially when you're walking down the final round on a Sunday. So head over to the site, take a look at Chris's picks for the Barclays, grab a copy of that cheat sheet that's going to help really outline everything you need to make those DraftKings lineups. All right, dude, I think we covered it. Baseball, golf, good little nice little Wednesday going on here.
Oh, glad to be back on the pod. It felt great.
All right, man. I will. I'll talk to you soon. And remember, head over to dailyfantasysportsrankings.com, DFSR.com for short. And for a limited time, with our new NFL product launch, you can grab a free 2-week trial to the projection system for NFL, which also includes MLB. And obviously the big news there is that we include the Player Lab for NFL, which is really going to allow you to do some of that deep diving for NFL. Take a couple weeks, play around with it, take a look at all the different filters that you can use, and that 2-week trial is going to take you right up until that first week of NFL, so you're all good, nothing to worry about heading into week one of the NFL. All right, man, I will talk to you soon, and yeah, let's win it in baseball today.
Sounds good, man.
All right, take it easy, everybody.